And we've got Andrea Bunting on the line from Climate Action Moreland. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Zane and Jacob.
Hello, Andrea.
Hi.
So we wanted to talk to you this morning about a few things. Well, first things first, we were just talking about local government elections. And can you tell us a bit about what Climate Action Moreland got up to in terms of, I guess, relating to and nudging the Moreland election in a more climate-conscious direction?
Certainly. Yes, well, this time we didn't run a candidates forum. We do that regularly for the state and federal election, but we decided instead we would survey them and all candidates, which we did without... we didn't give them questions to answer that, you know, to tick boxes, because we felt that would just be helping specific parties. So we asked them all just to write a paragraph about what they would be pushing for in the climate and environmental areas on council. And we put that up on our website. And we were astonished at the responses. You can see how many people are looking at this. So we had 6,000 views over the course of the election. Most of them were on the day of the election or the day before, of course. And another one of our members, John Englert, also did some specific analysis around Northeast Ward, which got several thousand views in Faulkner. So it looks like people are actually seeking out information on the candidates, and they knew, well, maybe they Googled, but we were the place that was providing that information.
Yeah, nice work.
It's good, yes, good to see that, that so many people read it, but,
And what did you think of the council? I know we haven't heard the sort of finished results yet, but I know that you've been somewhat involved in...
Yeah, well, it's certainly, it was phenomenal with the vote for the Greens. I live in the south ward of Moreland, and the Greens there, they've ended up with over 50% after all the other postal votes have come in and so on. But, of course, Sue Bolton, who's been a fantastic help for Climate Action Moreland. She's looking really good, especially for somebody who's only in their first term. And with 20 candidates, her result of nearly 13% is quite amazing.
Mm. Yeah, it was a massive field.
We hope to get her back.
Mm. Yeah, it'd be good. More Greens on council, most likely Sue Bolton back on there.
Yeah.
Continue shaking things up and leading the way at a local government level.
Yes, we'll see what happens. So it'll be quite a mixed bag, I think. Well, you know, I think Labor might get four. So we'll see what happens. Yeah, four or five, I think. Expecting four.
Yes. Now, on to a slightly different topic. Some weeks ago, there was that massive storm in South Australia. There was blackouts, and a bunch of conservatives came out and went on the attack and said, look, these blackouts show why we should stick with fossil fuel generation and move at a, no pun intended, glacial pace towards renewables uptake. Other people have said, no. The whole issue here is that transmission towers got blown over in the wind. It's got nothing to do with the fact that there's a bunch of wind farms and some of them turned off for safety reasons. And I've seen some of your posts on social media and you're kind of saying, well, there are issues with renewables and we do need to do some things differently. Yeah, can you tell us a bit more, you know, what do you think about this whole question of 100% renewables and blackouts and all of this stuff?
Yeah, well, certainly we do need to move rapidly to 100% renewables, and it's not a straightforward matter. You know, I've done a fair bit of work with wind power. I wrote a thesis on wind power some years ago, so I've, you know, certainly aware of a lot of the issues that around wind. Now, the critics of wind focused on its intermittency, which is the thing that everybody knows about, and that means it varies quite substantially just depending on where the wind is blowing or not. But that's not the main things that occurred on this day of the blackout, because wind has some other features. So, yes, wind turbines were lost because they didn't continue through a low voltage, a very short-lived low voltage period. It was actually repeated. And they're required to stay online, though it was repeated. So as to whether there was a problem with how they were set up, and that's been changed. So wind was implicated in that. That can, of course, be fixed, and has been. The other thing, of course, was the state was depending too much on power from Victoria on that day. So, and then what happened was the big power line from Victoria, called the interconnector, went down. And then they couldn't, the system went rapidly unstable. It's the frequency that dropped, but it's a technical matter. And that was because of the nature of the generators. They had still a lot of wind on there, and they didn't have enough of their local gas generators. So what they should have done, what normally happens in this sort of situation, is that you load shed. That means you black out some parts of the city or some big industries. You don't go a complete blackout. Mm. So the way that a lot of it was being portrayed was this was inevitable. And I don't think it was inevitable. And in fact, it had been predicted. So it had been predicted that with a massive growth in wind power in South Australia, and the way the system was being operated, that the state may black out, and it did. In fact, it was predicted 3 days beforehand, but thought that it may be a possibility by the Grattan Institute. So that was interesting. And the market operator had also predicted this might happen. So what do you do? Mm. The thing is, you can't just say, I think this is a case of a market has gone mad. Mm. The market is running wild. So we don't have an orderly transition to 100% renewables. At the moment, we've got this market that says, well, the wind farms are going where they're best, where they get the best deal, the most favourable treatment from the government, makes it easier and where the winds are strongest and so on. And that's South Australia. Now, South Australia is sort of very vulnerable because it's at the end. We need wind everywhere. But we need different types of renewable energy technologies.
Hmm.
We need the best could be solar thermal, because what that would have, if we'd had more solar thermal, that's the right type of generator to have helped stop the blackouts, to give them more time.
Hmm. So they've got that dispatchable storage.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's more stable. It slows down this rate, the generation. The frequency drop. I don't want to go into technical issues, but it's the type of generator that would have slowed it down, so they would have had time to do some blackouts when they had a crisis. They just lost the power lines in Victoria. They would have had time. Mm. They didn't have time because wind, it wasn't helping to maintain this frequency. So solar thermal actually is a good technology for, it's a bit more like the traditional power stations, because it offers this way of stabilising when you have a crisis.
Yeah, I remember when the Zero Carbon Australia 2020 report was getting put together, and it sort of looked at, if we build a bunch of these solar thermal plants, the really big ones, the mature ones that will kind of come after the smaller first generations and then the medium-sized generation of things get built, once there's a fully commercialised, mature solar thermal industry, they'll be using the same type of turbines that are used in traditional coal-fired power stations.
Yeah. So like the steam turbines, they're very good, for stabilizing the grid. So yeah, it's just your heat source is different. Instead of burning coal, you're getting it from the sun.
Hmm.
Of course, you need a lot more diversity. It's not just solar thermal is great, and it can store the solar energy. But of course, in the winter, it's best stored for a few days rather than massive periods of time. But you need a diversity. Pumped hydro is actually another very good way of storing. A lot of people at this, you know, I read a lot of stuff from renewables advocates at the time, and they were saying we need more batteries. Well, yes, but a model that a lot of people were saying was, oh, you'd have households who would have their own battery backup. So when if there was a blackout, they would be right. Now, who'd be having that? It would be the richer ones, and they're expensive, and they're a big use of resources. So batteries, unless there's some major technological breakthroughs, not only are they expensive, which people focus on, but the use of resources, particularly energy, plus other materials that go into making batteries.
It will help. Nasty stuff goes into making them.
But it's not the main solution. We need a whole diversity of things. But another thing that we really need, which people don't talk about, is that we need to massively reduce our energy usage. You know, we waste a lot. We waste it, our buildings are so terrible. We use cars instead of public transport. You know, in industry, there's so much inefficiency with energy. And so people think higher prices, well, yes, that will help in some cases, but of course the poorer households will bear the brunt of that. And industry doesn't necessarily respond to that. So we need massive government regulations to actually start slashing. You know, we've only really started in a little bit in terms of getting more energy efficient, but we also need to start slash waste. So this is another thing. If we can reduce our the way we use energy, and also, you know, we also to be able to shift it around to when the wind blows, which you can. There are a lot of things that can be shifted. You know, you can think of some household uses. Washing clothes, washing dishes is one. Even air conditioners and refrigerators can be switched off for a little bit of time.
So have like a smart dishwasher, and it turns on when there's a glut of energy supply.
So that's one solution. And of course, you know, they talk about making hydrogen when a lot of wind and so on. But that idea of we can't just keep using energy the way we've done. You know, just that it's there. We expect to be able to switch it on whenever we want, because that model is not. You know, it's going to be highly problematic with renewable energy. Another thing, of course, I think, is the market model is broken because of the way they were running the market on that day. It was very high risk. You know, a huge storm was coming, but they were using the market principles. Let's get the cheap power from Victoria rather than thinking that it was a possibility that they would lose any transmission lines. And so it's because we have this market operating rather than a centrally controlled one, operator who might have said no on this day, you know, we will be more prudent, or even at any time to be more prudent. So that's what I think the whole model of the market is.
There's a renewable energy boffin from UNSW, University of New South Wales, Mark Diesendorf. He's said grid upgrades aren't sexy. People are happy to talk about these lovely wind turbines and steamy solar thermal plants, but no one wants to talk about grid upgrades. And
yes, that's right. We need the power lines to go between them.
Well, I think this relates to this question of the market versus public sector. Is the market going to build all of these new upgraded grids that will be needed to go to 100% renewables to link all of these diverse wind and solar plants?
Well, yeah, I think the case of South Australia is now looking again at linking with South Australia and New South Wales. That was the old Riverlink proposal, which got ditched. And I think, you know, the government, that's a role for government. The government said it's got to say we have to have these things. South Australia is very vulnerable. because it's right at the end of the network. And so it does need intervention to say, look, we can't let the market mean this state is more vulnerable than everyone else, because that's really what it is. As I said, this was predicted. And so they need to say, well, let's do this orderly, this transition orderly, so South Australia isn't having all the wind turbines there because it's so windy, and that we strengthen South Australia's grid, because they deserve to have, you know, not be bearing the brunt of this, which is really what's happening, because, you know, because they're not getting that extra investment and the changes so that wind power is spread more evenly across the country.
That's right.
Victoria could do with a lot more wind power.
Yeah.
And our grid is a lot more secure because we're connected to three states. So we're not going to lose, you know, that. Tasmania, of course, was vulnerable a few months ago when it lost its Basslink, and the storage had run down because of the market, you know, because Hydro Tasmania has been making so much money during the carbon price period. So that was, again, market principles, meaning one state was very vulnerable. So treating this whole thing as a market is—it's actually, I think, a lot of people are now saying, "Look, we can't go on like this anymore." So we might see some changes to this whole neoliberal agenda around energy and getting back to a lot more control by governments, which is a good thing.
For sure. All right. Well, we should probably wrap it up. But thank you very much for having a chat with us.
Nice to be with you.
Yes, and we'll have to catch up again.
Yes, well, I hope to be writing something about this for Green Left Weekly. So, and I'll try and keep it not too technical, because I know I like to go into the technical field, but so that people can understand a lot more about what's happening rather than this sort of polarised debate.
Yeah, for sure. All right, yeah. I'll look forward to that. And keep an eye out on the Green Left Radio Facebook page, because we'll post that article up there when it comes out at greenleft.org.au.
Okay, thank you very much, Dane and Jacob.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
See you soon.
See you. Bye.